This is tape recording number 7101 C18, a lecture given by L. Ron Hubbard on the 18th of January, 1971. The title of this lecture is PR Becomes a Subject. Copyright 1971 by L. Ron Hubbard in the United Kingdom. Copyright 1978 by L. Ron Hubbard in the USA. All rights reserved. Unauthorized duplication, translation, importation, and distribution is a violation of applicable laws. This tape is 72 minutes long. Reproduced by Golden Era Productions.
How are you? Well, some of you are alive. Now, what happens here?
This is the 18th of January, AD 21. What happens here? Very often, used to happen at St. Hill occasionally, as the developmental line would exceed the write-up line. And that essentially is what has happened here, and I found it best to give you a very rapid rundown of the one of the several developments which have been made in the field of administration. The area of administration is comparable to auditing on the third dynamic, and where an auditor has one PC, an administrator has a whole bunch of them. And he audits on standard procedures, and he audits at a very rapid rate. Now, if you can perceive administration in this light as having a great many procedures, but all of them very standard, you all of a sudden get a new look. In the field of PR, for instance, the main trouble is that no one uses standard PR. Practically no one. There is a textbook on the subject. One of the reasons why the textbook is not completely applied is the discipline is poor in this field, because the subject itself didn't have any great use. We'll touch on that this evening, but I just wanted to give it to you as an example. So here is a field. There are certain standard procedures. Now, hardly anybody but a Scientologist would know what you were talking about if you said standard procedures. He says, oh, yeah, well, yeah, I get it. Your textbook, yeah, you read that in school, and then you go on, you do something, on them, you know, textbook had anything to do with it. That's the truth. And one of the difficulties the world is in right this minute is they've thrown away the textbook of economics. And there's a couple of Hungarians, not that there's anything wrong with Hungarians, but it's a great oddity that a couple of Hungarians have been for the last decade or two wandering around from government to government, being employed by prime ministers, and they give him a whole bunch of squirrel economic technology, and the country goes broke. It's quite a system. And I'm not joking, actually. This has been going on. The last place they stopped was England. A little earlier than that, there was a fellow named Lord Keynes. And Lord Keynes, he was part of the Oxford movement, I think, and he was part of the Fabian group, and they had peculiar sexual ideas and so forth. They were very strange people. And Lord Keynes took the textbook on economics and wrote it backwards or upside down, crossed it with the manufacture of firecrackers and the burial of dead rats, and began to teach this very broadly, so that in the early 30s we began to find Keynesian economics being practiced very hard and fast and furiously and by the professors only at Harvard. And from Harvard, it swung out into the remaining American universities and went out into other universities in the world. A completely untried ivory tower professorial approach to the field of economics, the central theme of which is create want. So that if you create want, economics all solves itself. Only he forgets that he is simply squirreling on the law of supply and demand. Doesn't state that. Forgets anything having anything to do with inflation and deflation. And now we as a group actually are confronted by an escalating inflation. And this inflation subject is a very nasty subject to have much to do with. Inflation is predicted through the 70s at the rate of about 8% per annum for the U.S. dollar. Well, that's just another method of placating the public, because it's been escalating, rising much more rapidly than that in the last few years. Trouble with inflation, if anybody looked at the basic textbook on the subject, is it goes in an upward swinging curve, and the curve gets steeper and steeper and steeper until it gets vertical. And at that point, that's it. You bury your money. Now, it's happened with several countries recently. And these countries have bitten the dust. And they have not been the same country afterwards. They were in different hands. So if the primary financial income of our movement is from the United States, and somebody is tampering with the United States dollar on the basis of a squirrel textbook, people have suddenly woke up to it. I mean, it took them long enough, 1930 forward, you know. People suddenly woke up to the fact that they're dealing with squirrel economics. There's beginning to be a fairly good hue and cry on the subject, actually. They've traced it back to Harvard, and it's sort of, there's a book just been released on the subject, exposing it all. Actually, I collided with it a few years ago and wondered where all this came from, found the rest of the world didn't know where it all came from, and did some tracking down on it myself. Somebody who was a suppressive, decided to ruin a lot of economics, and they've succeeded in doing so. This gives us a problem. Now, how does this come in to what I'm going to talk to you about tonight? Well, it comes into this that I'm presenting you. There's an actual problem. Money will be worth less and less, but probably under the weird duresses of the thing, there will be less of it. Worth less and less and be less of it. Now, therefore, a movement which is expanding requires certain things. It is expanding into, we are actually, expanding into a world which is, to be make an understatement of the age, a bit mad. And we have to exist within the economic framework of the society. If we don't exist in the economic framework of the society, we'll have had it. For instance, it might amaze you, but that SMERSH, the World Federation of Mental Health, National Association of Mental Health Network, is having an awful time. We decided some time ago to cut off their supply, and we are doing so. They, nevertheless, have all the government appropriation there is in the field of mental health. They are dependent only on the bayonets of the government, really, and to the degree that they are supported by governments. That makes a very weak movement. Makes a very weak movement. The wheel turns, the political wheel turns, the political fashions fade, because they're not delivering anything, which brings us closer to our subject tonight. Their product is death. Now, anybody can produce that without going to a university for 12 years. I can see a mafia hood right now requiring a certificate that he has studied for 12 years. Now, this is not into an unsavory lines. They are badly organized. They appear to be fairly well organized, but they're not. They're badly organized. They're badly financed. A group such as our own, going into a world which is not too orderly, succeeds to the degree that it is efficient, that it has workable, useful technology, and to the degree that it stays alert and handles the situations as they arise. Those three conditions are necessary to a forward movement and an expansion. So it has been my basic work here in 1970 to bring forward enough administrative information and enough administrative technology to bring the field of administration into a par with auditing, which, as you know, is terribly precise. Now, that has been accomplished in the theoretical and in the practical aspects both. Now, therefore, the FEBC and the material which is being taught at this time leads up to these breakthroughs in the field of administration. You're not dealing now with somebody's idea of how the thing should be. You're dealing with some natural basic laws. It isn't because I have an idea that if you say, do you have an ARC break, ARC, U, C, D, E, I, is there an earlier similar ARC, U, C, D, E, I, F, N? It isn't because I say this works, or that this is true, or that the mind should operate this way. That is not that. It is a basic discovery. It incorporates many parts, but these things assembled come into flying a root. Now, there is theory merging into practical application with which you are all familiar. Now, this can be gorgeously abused. This is for a PC who has an emotional upset. So if a PC is sitting there with a high TA, we say, do you have an ARC break? Misuse of a tool. So the auditor struggles around and nothing much happens, and sometimes he actually makes it and gets the TA down by some other means which is disguised inside this subject. But the truth of the matter is, after he's done this with his PC a few times and so on, you'll find the PC is now ARC broken about ARC breaks. The technology is sufficiently good to obtain a recovery from that, too. But this is a standard technology. Now, what is this? Basically, the situation is that there is a situation. That is the first thing one has to be able to recognize, that there is a situation. Now, to know there's a situation, one must have a familiarity with an ideal scene and with the existing scene. And he finds the existing scene is different from the ideal scene. So he knows he has a situation. Now, the situation can be analyzed by taking the data related to the situation and narrowing it down, and then we find what caused the situation, which we call a why. And having found that, we can remedy it, and the PC recovers from the ARC break. Oh, you thought I was talking about administration, didn't you? Now, if you put these two things, then, a frame of reference, you find out that we now have in our hands a superior administrative technology still in a developmental stage, as all progressive or dynamic technologies are. Progressive and dynamic technologies actually do not cease to develop. They continuously refine. That staggers somebody if he doesn't realize that what is being refined is the progress being made by the basic law, not the change of the basic law. I think the law of gravity keeps changing because somebody eventually develops a method to make anti-gravity, don't you think? The law of gravity has not changed. When you have isolated the basic laws, you get a continuous refinement. Some people are idiotic enough to call mixing a bunch of chemicals in a test tube and getting soup instead of dupe basic discovery. No, it isn't. What it is simply development from basic discoveries which are made. There probably has not been a basic discovery made on the planet for the last 25 years, except perhaps in our field. This is pretty interesting. All we get is a developmental progress whereby people refine what they already knew. There were several basic discoveries made in the early part of the century, and the last of them probably was how you tickle the tiger's tail and got plutonium to cease to exist at rapidity, and then how you manage to make hydrogen dehydrogenize at vast violence. Those took some basic and original discoveries, which were not new at the time, but the developmental line exposed them into a practical application. So anyway, there hasn't been any basic discoveries to amount to anything. Nearly all these discoveries which you see around, they're not all these developments which you see around the faster automobile and so on, is simply the refinement of something. So you can continue to expect refinement from the basic discoveries which have been put together here in the last year, and actually within the last 25 years in this field, because it's been under investigation. Now, these laws which we're working with now are not resident in just last year's work. You will find them spattered all through the OEC course, these fundamentals. Now, as these fundamentals are put together, you approach something that appears to be a standard procedure. A standard procedure is subject to refinement, just as you get a further workability. In the field of public relations itself, we have just started the subject. The subject actually did not exist except in somebody's imagination as an applicable technology, because they didn't apply it the way they should have applied it, and they didn't know what it was for, and they didn't know its basic laws. It's very amusing, but public relations just began. Now, every professor that teaches public relations would contest this madly. Well, it began back in 1911. I would say, Professor, for the love of Christ, will you please research your subject? It began in Rome with political campaigns painted on the outside of the Colosseum. I don't happen to be kidding right now. But as far as our written technology of public relations is concerned, it goes back, way back. And as far as the written technology is concerned, it belongs in Rome. And it started out there as a formal subject to get senators elected. But there's been very dim fumblings all the way along the line. Now, what would you do if you suddenly took this subject? If you took this subject in so many words, and all of a sudden it had a precise, exact role that you couldn't get along without. What would happen? All of a sudden it wouldn't be something that they hired six guys in this $100 million firm to exploit and to monkey with, and they sit in the back room and figure out how they can do this or that with this or that. If any of these guys use their standard technology, they'd probably run well. But it's very difficult to get these fellows to use the standard technology because they really don't know their own textbook too well. There is a textbook, see, but it's some technologies. Now, what are they for? As a result, they have let an entirely different part of the university walk off with about 50% of their subject. I can tell you what public relations is for. What is this subject for? Public relations is for the handling and control of human emotion and reaction. Ah, we got a subject now. Yeah, but look, they gave 50% of this away to the psychologists who fumble-dumbled it all off and applied it to rats. Ah, there's something coming adrift. So they split their subject. It's a third dynamic technology. The psychologist moved it all over onto another dynamic. He tried to get it over onto the first dynamic and this, that, and the other thing. So what is the central subject itself? The handling and control of human emotion and reaction. Good. Well, now you have to do quite a bit with this subject. Immediately, you have to do quite a bit with this subject. Ah, we're away now. Oh, this is what this stuff is for. Good. All right. Now, what parts of what do you have to use in order to do this? Well, according to the public relations technologies, you've got one that runs something like this. You do a survey, and on the basis of this survey, you put together a program, and you use your various communication media, word of mouth, newspaper, magazines, loudspeakers. And with this various communication media, based on this program, you alter human emotion and reaction. Actually, it's such a failure, the way it has been done, that in the public relations textbooks, they say, people who say they're molding public opinion, of course, are just silly. Newspapers think they mold public opinion, ha ha ha. In other words, they're laughing at their own subject. In that little line, it says, this subject has failed. Let's go back to science or survival and see how this thing works. We do a survey. We put the exact arithmetical number on each question of this survey in its response. All right, let's ask this question. Do you like dogs? And the fellow says, I hate dogs. We put 0.9. You got it? Science of survival. Put it down arithmetically. You add up that question and its arithmetical values, the number of people it was asked. You could do it as crudely as then divided by the number of people, you find exactly what tone scale point you are working with. To control a tone scale point, you move, old law, you move half a tone to a tone above it. Your campaign must then be half a tone to a tone above it. Instantly and immediately, you have a successful campaign which molds public opinion, which controls human emotion and reaction. So there we are. Yeah, but how do you get these questions? I mean, the question, that's it. That's very simple. There's nothing much to this question. Three questions. One is the equivalent of be, one is equivalent to do, one is the equivalent of have. Very good. Be, do, have, three questions. Above and below it, why, you could have a couple of null questions. You're trying to find out if somebody on the assembly line likes automobiles. He's building them. Does he like them? Well, that's an easy one because it's already a human emotion. Do you like automobiles? Let's find out if he's going to work on the assembly line. Make it a little bit tougher. Now we're going to find out, are you going to work on the assembly line? All right, we go around and ask public relations. Are you going to work on the assembly line? The guy says no, and the next guy says yes, and so forth. You're no place. So therefore, you take the questions you want to know on the subject of be, do, have, and you encode them into human emotion using the ARC triangle. We don't care whether you put A or R or C after each question. You're going to translate the basic question that you know into human emotion in order to obtain involvement. And you immediately have involvement. So you get the true answer, don't you? But the target of your subject is, of course, the control of human emotion and reaction. So if that is the case, then you would have to have involvement in human emotion and reaction. So how do you put this question together? Let's go right back to battery now. This subject is the control of human emotion and reaction. So therefore, the questions of your survey have to be what you want to know, transported over into a human emotion and reaction. B, do automobiles exist? Translated once across for an A is, do you like automobiles? Now you will get then an emotional response which can be plotted. Now why all this? Now you see, I'm teaching you this backwards. I'm moving back. Now the penny drops. The primary barrier to production is human emotion and reaction. It's the primary barrier to production. And all at once, we know where PR lives. There's its use. Not in getting somebody to become a man of extinction by drinking Seagram's whiskey to aid and assist advertising, which would be a minor use, but actually to sound out the public to which the campaign is addressed so as to handle the human emotion reaction. All right, and I'll trace it back through the basic laws that we're involved with then. Is the primary barrier to production is human emotion and reaction. Public relations is the technology of handling and controlling human emotions and reaction. So you have to find out what is the human emotion and reaction, so you get an encoding of the question. Three questions, one be, one do, one have. You translate those over into an emotional question by adding the ARC triangle. You plot that. Now you get your human emotions in response to these questions. You add them up, you put your program together against the tone scale, one half to one band above. You will have a pretty uniformly successful method of reach. Now, are you willing to argue with me that all of a sudden tell you that PR has suddenly become of age? So the subject has been around since Rome, and it does have its own technologies. But the most ignorant people of its technologies are some of the PR guys with whom I've worked. I've been trained in this field, and the oral tradition of the field does not contain a great many of the textbook solutions. The textbook technology is missing to a very marked degree in much of what you call the oral tradition when you're taught verbally by these fellows. They know what to do, kind of, but they find themselves often adrift. Went back recently and read the textbooks of this subject on its developmental line, mostly accumulations of experiential application and I was struck by the fact that very few people use in this field of PR. Very few people in this field actually use standard approaches. They're a little bit squirrely, but there is a standard approach. Ah, so. Now, why don't they use a standard approach? Well, the subject wasn't oriented. What is the subject for? So the dumb fools go and hire a psychologist. They're the birds that control human emotion and reaction. So they hire a psychologist. I think this is marvelous. Right in their own technologies. Now, these were then insufficiently exact as procedures to impress the practitioner. They were insufficiently exact, insufficiently precise. So he thought he had some judgment involved. But if you know Dianetics and Scientology, and you move into this field, you will all of a sudden find that they mourn the absence of a science of the mind in their own field. Like, how can you do anything with this subject unless you have a science of the mind? That remark is made in their textbooks, you see. Types of remarks like this. They mourn their lack of success, and actually they don't even know our communication formula. Now, our communication formula is vitally necessary to the practice of this field. Vitally necessary. It's as simple as cause, distance, effect. If you take just the shorthanded formula, cause, distance, effect. Their public relations, their communication media, they think of themselves as communication technology. They do not have that. But cause, distance, effect. They don't have it streamlined down like that. So when you make a survey, they actually have missed, if you go into some of their textbook, they've actually missed certain points that were vital. There's an FO right now which gives you the proper cycle, and it does not agree with the textbook cycle because the textbook cycle has simply left out a couple of steps that would have made somebody fail. I needn't go into it any further than that. There's the reason why one was turned out, which was a public relations form for submission for an okay. And it follows a definite cycle of action, which is based on, actually, the communication formula and so forth. It's highly precise. And that was because they didn't have the communication formula, so they couldn't write it up in their textbook as to what you did exactly. So they missed out a couple of points. And then those two points of action would bring about a failure. One of the reasons why managers sometimes throw them out the front door and won't have a public relations firm anywhere around is they very often popularize a flap. They don't pre-survey. Somebody just gets killed in the plant. Newspaper reporter calls up, "Watch this, I hear about somebody being killed in the plant, bud," you know, in good English like they use. And the public relations man gets on the phone and he says, "No comment." See, or he says this, or he says that, or he says something else. And he mishandles this. And then he assumes that there is a situation, that the people in the town are going to be very alarmed because somebody has been killed in the plant by poisonous gases or something. So public relations at once gets out a campaign saying how these poisonous gases are not very poisonous. It didn't bother to survey. Was there a situation? You see what point was missing? So public relations very often is involved in handling situations which don't exist. And they very often find themselves involved in bringing about situations which didn't exist. Let's take a fellow who isn't good textbook in the field of public relations now. He glanced at the textbook on his way through class one day by accident. Now he goes out and he's worked alongside of some guys who are old-timers and they know best. And Frequent change of auditors is one of the reasons why the firms they go to work for fail, by the way. It's actually just that. Your company's account is handed through so many account executives, and the turnover account executives is so rapid that the service being rendered from that account is poor, and this is traced as a primary reason why you shouldn't use an independent outside public relations firm. Frequent change of auditors. Goes back almost to an auditor's code, don't you think? So this guy, he fumbles around, and he gets himself some kind of a... He's got a job. He's sort of trained experientially in practical aspects of it. Maybe gets up as far as TR0, see? But practical aspects of it he puts into practice. And these various practical aspects are some little rules that have sort of been made up, and he manages to go through. Whereas, as a matter of fact, there was a procedure in the textbook, if he had studied it, which probably would have brought the situation off. So he goes off half-cocked on some kind of a campaign, on somebody's hunch. I'm just sure that these characters will like these Wheaties with green tops instead of red tops. Get over in the field of market research. I'm just sure of that. All right, now we're going to have you tear off your mother-in-law's head and send it in, and we will send you a box top or something. And he lays a god-awful egg with this campaign. The company puts out $123,794.62, and they don't get any mother-in-law's heads at all. And then somebody goes back and he says, "Say, what do you know?" He said, "We did, you know, he gets a tip someplace or another, you know. You should have asked people first, you know." Yeah, I guess I should have asked people first. Actually, they might not even get as close as a formal survey, but they might get this close. Well, all right, we'll call up the Gallup company, and after this, when we talk about mother-in-law's heads, we will get a survey made out in the public as to whether you like this sort of thing or don't like that sort of thing. And that costs another $225,000. And they get a whole Gallup poll survey done, and guys go around in the streets and shove microphones at people and knock on doors, and they get all written down and send letters to selected publics and... Oh, they're very expensive. Anyhow, they find out this survey, when it was all put together, seemed to be very reliable, but now they said to tear off the bottom of the box, which is now purple, and that the company would send the family their mother-in-law's head, see? And then this campaign doesn't work either. And somebody then gets a vast research project together, and they finally find out that people on surveys don't tell the truth. And now they've got the bugaboo. The bugaboo of a survey is that people say what they think somebody wants to hear. And they say, "Oh, yes, I love Wheaties," whereas, as a matter of fact, they smoke Luckies, you see. And they find out that the lie factor is so great that they have to put a lie question into the survey in order to... Well, I'm clowning up a series of examples here, but I think you comprehend some of these examples. And this is what it finally amounts to. This is what it finally amounts to. That they didn't know what their subject was for exactly. Didn't know what their subject was for, so it is sort of being oddly used, and it's sort of off its own standards because it isn't oriented. So if they had the definition that there was human emotion and reaction, they wouldn't go around with questions that didn't elicit an emotional response in the first place. They would have to know a great many refinements. Now, I'm not ignorant on this subject. I was actually trained by Midwest Rogers. One time, when I innocently walked in with my wide blue eyes open, pulled in as a writer to the California Centennial, 1849-1949. And they had to get a hold of a writer, and they had to have somebody who could write up the little history books and so forth that they needed. And so I said, okay, yeah, I'll do that. I've been up in Motherlode Country and know all about that, and I can look it up, and you've got a lot of books, and we put them together, and we give you your little manuals and so forth. It's all fine, all right, boys, and so on. And they said, no. I said, what's the matter? So, well, we have a rule in the Midwest, Rogers, that anybody who was working anywhere in, around, Centennials or things, see, they're the outfit, wild name, Midwest Rogers. It doesn't say anything, don't you think? They want to remain anonymous, I think. But they put on all of these big centennials, like the Sesquicentennial of Texas and all of that sort of thing. The big boom shows, you see. And they say, you've got to study the technology and so forth of how we work before you can work with us, which is great. American firms have this down pretty pat. Two advertising agencies or an account executive in the advertising agency and his staff talking to the company advertising contact man put on about the wildest show you ever wanted to see. Well, one of them is educating the other one into what we do, and then the other one will turn around and educate them into what we do, and they get a feel that they're good at this sort of thing. They've got a lot of these little gimmicks. They do have technology. They don't quite know where it fits a lot of times. So here they say to me, well, yeah, well, you think you're just a writer. And you've got to study what we do. So you come to school, and the next thing you know, I'm sitting there listening all about and doing the play demos on exactly how you throw together, a centennial. Now, don't think there isn't technology in this field, because a Midwest Rogers man walks in with his little grip, and he's got a few little things in there. He's got some tickets, he's got some other little things, with very little money in his pocket. And he walks into this town, and a few months later, they have a centennial. It's absolute creative magic, if you ever saw one. This is promotional par excellence. He organizes the various contests. He gets the businessmen, the local chamber of commerce. It all goes off almost by checklist. You do this, you do that, you do the other thing, and then you do something or other, and then et cetera. And then when you've got that, the beauty queen contest and so on, and then the tickets are sold in the stores, and that's the votes for the beauty queen, and you do the and the Midwest Rogers man, he gets the hats and whips. Yeah, what's this? Actually, I wouldn't be able to tell you too much of the technology because it's all super technological. We could be criticized on the same ground. They've got their special names for everything. Hats and whips, that's the souvenir business. So the guy who organizes the whole thing, why, the Midwest Rogers man, he reserves to himself the hats and whips concession. So he sells out this hats and whips concession, and that's how he gets a side payoff from all of this. And they wind up with a doggondest, biggest, wildest centennial anybody ever heard of. So when I finished with their course and got all set with that and took my examination and et cetera, I was getting all ready to sit down to my typewriter and write about the dear old days of 49 when Black Bart was preventing the digging of gold. Why, they said, say, how would you like Sacramento? And I said, what? What are you talking about? Well, they said, you're one of the best agents we got here, and so on. You got the highest grades, and wouldn't you like to go up to Sacramento and take charge of that sector? I said, no, I'll sit here and write your story. Thank you very much. But they do have technology. There's lots of technology in the field. Now, that's public relations technology applied to promotion. You would apply that type of technology to a Congress or something of this sort. Then there's the other old daily grind technology. But what are you trying to do with all of this? You're either trying to create or generate, handle, control, and so forth, human emotion and reaction. The whole field of public relations, no matter how many little compartments it got, is actually occupying that zone and area. And that is the subject, if you've got to have one, called psychology. That's what the psychologist should be able to do. That's what a general is always trying to grab hold of his psychological warfare staff and say, bring the enemy to their knees so we don't have to expend all this in ammunition. We don't mind expending troops, but firing these guns is expensive, you know. He's always asking psychological warfare. Well, actually, it's just simply a job in PR. Enemy, job in PR. Friends, job in PR. Just different publics. We right now could take a survey of the enemy. We know them, name, rank, serial number, where they live, why their grandmother had to marry the girl. We know all about them. All we'd have to do is take a survey of them on human emotion terms. Plot it up on the tone scale. Launch a campaign to them, mold their opinion. Now, you're mainly dealing in a world where the war for men's minds is rampant. Russia is fighting a war for the minds of men. And America, and every company in America, and the British Information Service, are all fighting a war to capture the minds of men. To do this, they use PR technology. We don't care whether it's called propaganda. We have here our northern neighbors, published in Canada, no, December 1970, number 159. It is written in Moscow. It is published in Canada. It's a fantastic tour de force. Here are several copies of it. Different months. July, August, September, October, November, December. Here's Popov, the clown, and his goat. They're world famous. They'll be delighting lucky Soviet kids this holiday season. For a personal look at the sunny clown and the Soviet circus, see pages 14 and 15. We open it up. Contents. Big mystery of human growth. The best year yet for us. Sex. 73,000 Dr. Spocks. Very intriguing. Cover page, when they speak about sex, how they're ending farm pollution. Will you go short of power and heat, you people in Canada, while we've got lots of it in Russia? USSR has 9 big problems. This is amazing. It's an amazing tour de force. Fantastic. They have a technique of counterpoint. Everything that is publicized in the American press is counterpointed in these magazines that it's good in Russia. You have juvenile delinquency in the United States, and we don't have. In the United States, you have to have women's freedoms movements, and in Russia, we've had them for years. Women perfectly free in Russia. In fact, they're the only ones at work. Here is the champion just before, a champion weightlifter, just before the world heavyweight lifting champion Jan Toltz left USSR for USA to take part in a tournament at Columbus, Ohio. The International Federation bosses stripped him of his title and record and handed the title over to Robert Bednarski of USA. Here's what Toltz did to those cheats. We find out that all the other competitors were on speed. They were on amphetamines. Bet nobody knew that. And nobody listened. And so forth. And he really did win. After all. Even when he lost. Are Roman Catholics turning to the left? It's PR. Fantastic. I isolated 3 systems in use in this. Mary Sue did an analysis on it. and I isolated three systems of propaganda which they use. Very effective. Three isolated technical systems. I gave you one of them. Don't bother the other two. You got dirty streets, Russia. They're all clean streets. You having troubles? If you was in Russia, you wouldn't have these troubles. Western youth, they have acne. Russian youth, no acne. Soviet doctors have cured it all. They found out what it is, yes. You get it? Counterpoint, 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 counterpoint. Effective, but somewhat defiant. So therefore, it's not very smooth. But this is dialectic materialism at use, which is their mental technology. All ideas result from the collision of two forces. If you say it differently, then the implant Thetans, they use a positive negative. Now, just as we're sitting here with the undercut of dialectic materialism, we're sitting here with an undercut of propaganda. Now, if you use the existing standard technologies of public relations, and if you use the standard existing means and media, and if you gave them just that little bit of refinement necessary of an orientation of the subject and what is the subject for, and you do it right straight down the groove, and then the people who use it know what they're doing. That is the important point. You have an impingement on the society. We're being treated to a counter-propaganda campaign like which nobody ever heard of. Now, somehow or another, we've got to move up to the front with this, and we don't have the news media under our control and so on. We're being treated to a counter-propaganda campaign and have for a long time. This isn't the press talking. This is the people who make the press talk talking. We have had innumerable wins. They're never reported. The enemy never does have any wins. They have hope. Did you ever analyze all of their news articles and so on? Hope. But they have a news office located up someplace in England and so on, which is a handout PR office, and it just sends out all these things you read about psychology is new hope for the, you know, mentally retarded will no longer be if certain things succeed. Hope. And we find out that by our survey of the British departments and ministries that they think the public is terribly, well, I actually had them surveyed to find out what they thought was bad propaganda so I could give it to them. And they answered up, and we've got it all written down in the bag if I ever wanted to machine gun them. Why, there it is. Because their PR men would go mad. And they just listen to what the PR man says inside the lineup. What is public opinion? Public opinion, what is written in the newspapers and what your PR man says. That's as near as a politician ever comes to it. A government is peculiarly susceptible to clipping newspapers. Now let's go back here to this Soviet deal. The Soviet published magazine, perfectly legal. They have some agreement with Canon and so on. This Soviet published magazine is given the fantastic job of doing what most embassies and so forth do in the field of overt intelligence, they call it, which is clipping magazines, newspapers. They have to do all this covert. To find out what is being said in the American press and in American technical journals and that sort of thing, it's necessary for the Russians to use their satellite states and to actually smuggle the stuff and so on. They have just to get what the New York Times says, it has to go back in a diplomatic mail pouch to Moscow for this stuff to be written. So they do a splendid job, really. There isn't anybody in Canada writing this. Russia export an editor that's permitted to write something in Canada? So all the material that goes into this is taken from intelligence sources. They have a fantastic network then just to collect this material. And then this material has to go to Moscow, and it has to be edited and put together, and the stuff written. Now, then it has to be turned around and exported, and all this rapidly enough for it to be timely, in order to hit the presses of northern neighbors published in Canada. Now we're really getting down to pay dirt. PR requires organization. And it requires pretty hot organization. If you ever wanted to see an organization have to function, it's a PR organization. You really have to know administration, left, right, and center, to do PR. There are very few PR men who are ever trained in administration. Yet it's essentially an administrative subject. It is the failure to keep their clipping book up to date that causes many a PR man to fail. Who organizes all of the stuff that brings this stuff in from covertly to diplomatic pouches to Russia to get it spilled out, to get it digested, clipped? Who keeps the office running there? Who supplies it with enough personnel that can speak the language and write in it? Who organizes the route back into northern neighbors and takes care of the PR to keep Canada happy to having it published? This is quite an organizational tour de force. So that propaganda of any kind requires organization. That is why, by the way, we knew very well that the enemy that we were confronted with was not a few random newspaper reporters, but was extremely well organized, because the timing on it and so on. And I made some interesting discoveries on this, because searching for it in the field of organization, I can tell you now just about exactly what kind of an organization they have and about where it sits and about what it does and so forth, just by knowing their organization requirements. And they stink. They stink. They couldn't run a kiddie car. It was just failing to find them and failing to estimate what they were doing and why is what kept us being hit by the thing. And also they were there first, and they had all what they call the mass media under total control and under their thumb. So, of course, they could say anything they pleased, and we were not in a position to say anything we pleased. So how do we reverse all of this? Well, now, there's one little sector of technology, and I've been going along this sector of technology, just showing you that you can make a breakthrough in a particular field and give you some sort of an idea of it. Now, PR comes into its own in the field of production. And the reason I'm talking to you about PR is the primary barrier to production is human emotion and reaction. And as you move forward, you will find you're in collision with human emotion and reaction almost consistently and continuously. If you don't understand some of this that I've been telling you about PR, you will have an awful time of it. If you think PR is going around and being a nice fellow, or talking somebody around in some fashion or another, why, you might as well forget it, because PR is not being a pleasant fellow. ARC is only one little portion of PR. PR is a technological activity. Now, it always has had technological procedures, so we've moved it up onto the front burner. Now, I'm not trying to sell you anything here with PR at all. I'm trying to give you an example of a technical breakthrough. Now, from the basic little laws which I gave you on the subject of PR, definition and scope of subject, you can now develop technical applications, and you can develop practices which are based on these basic actions and laws and formulas, and which utilize anything known about the subject to date, and it puts you in control of human emotion and reaction in your immediate vicinity. So, there is a piece of technology, and as a piece of technology, it has considerable value. But it gives you where you go when you make a basic breakthrough. We happen to be in the field of human emotion and reaction, and therefore we are in continuous collision with this particular field. Being in continuous collision with this field, we better know something about handling it. And therefore, one of the adjuncts that a production officer would have would be a PR arm of some type or kind. So, if he moved it up into the upper story and he was really working at volume, he would actually have to be supported by a PR man. If he weren't supported by a PR man, he would come a cropper. Unless you know something about this, unless you know that a subject exists, I'm not talking to you to suddenly know this whole subject, but you've got to know that such a subject exists, that it does have technology, and that it has found its basic and primary use, which is an adjunct of production. If you know those facts, your interest in it would be adequate, but when you start running into the problem of human emotion and reaction as a barrier, you would know that there is a technology that can move ahead with this and handle the human emotion and reaction you're running into as a barrier to your production. We have a whole world right now to handle. It will eventually go out something along the line of a forward action ahead of where we are. There will always be a sort of a PR outpost, or a small PR action going on in advance of where we are working. Now, the enemy has been trying very, very hard with very knuckle-headed PR, which overran itself and began to overrun itself and got mixed up along about the time of the Melbourne Inquiry. And ever since that time, the enemy has been making the continuous mistake of hitting it too hard. About that time, he went too far, and you find out there's been a press revulsion. But long before that, there was a press revulsion. There actually was a public revulsion. So the enemy, in following through various formulas of what he thought it should all consist of, and following them through very badly, has done a very bad job of it. He has made our name known. The recent, quote, lawsuit in England was worth easily £100,000 in advertising. Easily. We couldn't have bought it. It demonstrated that the government had no case against it, and it demonstrated that a member of parliament can say what he pleases. These are disrelated facts. Didn't have much to do with that. But that we would tack the government apparently made us very popular. The formula of revolution is as follows. The person who is antagonistic toward the government joins anyone who opposes it. They ask no questions about who they're joining. They only know that they want to blow down eventually, or change, or alter a government. Anybody who attacks the government then that's how revolution begins, and that's why revolutions are usually betrayed. The people who join revolutions are usually betrayed, because they never ask the question of who am I joining. They just join whoever's agin it. That outfit's agin it? Good. Must be a good outfit. Join it up. That formula just went on in England. The psychotic up there, Minister Crossman, he's a real spinner, quite mad. And that's not just a casual insult. He runs the New Statesman. He thinks the Scientologists are some sort of a revolutionary group that are not as bad as the Yippies, or something, and you read this over, why, you know, you're reading a guy who thinks the Martians are after him. So he wouldn't be able to differentiate who we are or what. But he has already decided that we're against the government. As a matter of fact, it isn't even true. But when they, that we lost in suing the government was not the point. That we were against the government was the point. You seldom get a chance to make a statement, we're against the government. Now, people who are looking for a raw red revolution, of course, are liable to be disappointed when they came to us because people are misreading the whole situation. Left and right misreading the situation. We have a PR situation, first and foremost. We have a PR situation. Therefore, this is part of the technology with which we're operating. This technology should be known to you. But there is a method of proceeding into the public. There is a method of handling and controlling human opinion. If you don't understand that, then your own hopes of expansion would be greatly curtailed. Administration and organization is very complex, but there is a method of extending your own basis of operation into the government, into the people, into the this, and even into the enemy. And that you should know that that is that. And come off a rather silly approach of just trying to be good, and eventually they will recognize your worth. Doesn't work at all. It has no value. In the field of PR, good works, well publicized, is one of the definitions which they give in a textbook on the subject. That's supposed to be the perfect definition of PR. Couldn't be further from the truth. Effective cause, well demonstrated. You see, they need a few little refinements. Then you can make forward progress. Now, all the organization you do in the world is not going to do you any good unless you're making forward progress into the environment in which you find yourself. An organization must only expand, and an organization which contract dies. That happens to be the way the universe is built. It isn't because I say so, it's because it's true. And so, therefore, you must look considerably to your various PR factors as you move on out. And these should not be neglected. Now, in the shininess and brassiness and newness of the technology with which you are now dealing, and the administrative technology with which you're now dealing, we haven't yet begun to fight along this particular line. I mean, we're really with it. Why, if you don't know that there is a method of handling human emotion and reaction, and you don't know that that is the method by which you will extend, and you don't know that that fancy mailing you're getting out and paying a lot of money for wasn't based on any survey, had no project back of it, had no campaign at all, didn't do anything, might as well have been thrown in the toilet. Because it wasn't put out along technological lines, do you follow? Therefore, the technology of PR is necessary because it forms one of the larger items in the budget of an administrator. It is big, and when it is neglected, you fail. And when it itself is bad, you also fail. So I am PRing the subject of PR to you. And I'm telling you that there has been a breakthrough in this field. I'm telling you that there is a technology. I'm telling you that you will find it absolutely vital, and that you certainly, somewhere up the line in handling product and organization, will collide with a situation which can only be handled by PR. And try as you will, you won't be able to get any further without the PR being handled, and you will have a hard enough time handling it, even using all of PR. So when all seems too grim, and you can't seem to get your point across, and you can't seem to get your product, and it just won't organize that way, then you do have a tool, and that tool is called PR. And it has its own technology, and we have made a breakthrough in this subject, and I actually respect the fellows who have worked hard in this field to make standard technologies extant. They are most overlooked by their own brethren. So, all the technology there is in this field is adaptable, providing you know what the subject is for, which the PR man doesn't. Isn't that remarkable?
All right. Let's take a 5-minute break, huh?